This is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott, and it is Mandela Day. Each year on July 18th, the life, work, and memory of Nelson Mandela is honored. Fans globally are invited to do 67 minutes of service in memory of Mandela's 67-year battle for social justice. Today would have been his 100th birthday, and President Barack Obama appeared in Johannesburg, South Africa, yesterday to commemorate the occasion.
Yes, by the end of his life, Madiba embodied the successful struggle for human rights. But that journey was not easy. It wasn't preordained. The man went to prison for almost 3 decades.
Nelson Mandela died in 2013. We're getting a personal reminiscence of the great man's life and times with On Second Thought producer Fenley Foxen, who lived in South Africa for 20 years. Hello, Fenley.
Hi, Virginia.
And Joe Richmond is on the line. He's in Cape Cod. He's the Radio Diaries founder and executive producer. He lived in South Africa and documented the life of Mandela in a series of radio specials. Hello, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well. What a day. Tell us what South Africa was like when you came to the country, Fenley, back in what? Which year?
So we arrived along with my parents and my brother in February 1993. So this was the scenario back then. Mandela was already out of prison. So he had come out of prison in February 11, 1990. The National Party was in power. So the National Party was for mainly the ethnic Afrikaans people, which is of people of Dutch descent. So no people of color was part of that party. It was just plainly the Dutch people. And the president was F.W. de Klerk. And during that time, there was so much negotiations going on between Mandela and F.W. de Klerk on how to, the transition of power.
Right.
So lots of conversations going on behind closed doors.
And actually, they won the Nobel Peace Prize together, didn't
yes.
they?
Yes. So F.W. de Klerk and Nelson Mandela won the Nobel Peace Prize. But the interesting part of that whole thing is, although they shared the stage together, they had a very strained relationship. Because you can imagine during the conversations, Mandela's going, you've got to give us full power. And then, F.W. de Klerk obviously was trying to keep some of that. And Mandela was not negotiating on that level. He wanted full control of the reins of the country.
And Joe, I welcome you to chime in if there's anything you hear about what Fenley's saying from her experience, because you were there for a long time and you studied his life. And there's so much that we hear about him being freed from prison, not as much about how he got there. Why was he thrown in jail initially?
Well, I mean, he was an activist from very early on, even before he arrived in Johannesburg. I think a lot of people start, when they talk about the history of apartheid, they start it sort of in 1948 when the Afrikaner Party, the National Party, took power. But of course, it wasn't like oppression of blacks started in 1948. The British government was oppressive as well. And so it's been a long-running battle, and Mandela was part of what was the Youth League of the ANC, which has been more of a militant side of the ANC at that point.
Well, go ahead, Fenley.
Sorry. And it was called Umkhonto we Sizwe, the military wing of the ANC, the Youth League, basically. He headed that up. And also prior to that, he actually attended Fort Hare University. And during that time, he was expelled from university because he led student protests. So this was all part of what he's always done.
Well, here's an early recording that, Joe, you used in an audio history of Mandela. Here is Mandela responding to the National Party winning the elections.
I remember I came out of Park Station that morning and bought a newspaper and learned that the National Party had won. And Comrade Oliver Tambo said, well, I like this because we now know that we have an enemy in power. And I think that we're going to have a better opportunity of mobilizing our people.
Fenley, why is that an important conversation, knowing that?
Well, it was important because that's how he was able to mobilize people. He wanted people to know, especially black South Africans, that there is an enemy in power and they are not looking after your rights. You must remember, black people in South Africa was under the Bantu education, which means that they weren't getting the full education that everyone else in the country was getting. There was so many segregation laws, like the Morality Act, where you cannot have an affair with a person of color, the prohibition of mixed marriages. There's they were totally suppressed. So when that moment happened, Mandela thought, okay, this is a great time to mobilize my people towards freedom. He wanted a unified South Africa, not that one that's just for white people, but one for all.
So he knew early on there was a lot of discontent. What was it about him that was able to sort of gather people around him and mobilize them? Joe, any thoughts on that?
I was just going to say, just to chime in before, that it's interesting to note that the system of apartheid actually didn't start back at that point in 1948. It was an evolution. So the word and the idea of apartheid started with President Verwoerd a little bit later. And that was, you know, I think it was always a bit, Mandela was really kind of a genius strategist in terms of public opinion. And that was really one of his strengths. And I think, you know, that clip and the idea of having a more visible an enemy that you could really see and get people to galvanize around was really important to him, yes. And that was his strength.
So there was an opportunism. There was a strategic nature to him, certainly.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it was not his first arrest when he was thrown in jail. He was arrested in December 5th, 1956, acquitted in March 29th, 1961, then arrested again and went to trial. Here's a recording that you found from that trial. This was in 1963, and he took the stand.
I have cherished the idea of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an idea for which I hope to live for. But my Lord, if it needs be, it is an idea for which I am prepared to die.
An idea for which I am prepared to die. Did all South Africans hear this?
Of course. I mean, not at the time. I mean, Joe could answer more to that.
Joe, what do you think?
It's really, I mean, that speech, it's so interesting about that speech because it's called now, it's called often the I am prepared to die speech because those five words are so well known. But there are actually 10,693 words in the speech.
So it's a long
speech.
Testimony.
And just to get a picture of what's happening here, this is the seven defendants in the Rovonia trial. Many people thought they would be executed, so they were prepared to die. And here he is standing up, giving a four-hour speech to the judge, saying, "I am prepared to die." And it's, you know, it says something about the man just in the delivery of, you know, of that moment. And I think that speech won a lot of, it got a lot of attention, and there was a lot of press in terms of, worldwide press paying attention to this trial. And a lot of people kind of see that speech as the moment that he really became the Nelson Mandela that we know. Mm. And it's interesting just about the speech itself because, like a lot of recordings at that time, they were just either erased or, over the years or lost.
Where'd you find it?
Well, that speech was found by an employee of SABC, the public broadcaster, after the transition, and it was on these plastic Dictabel recordings. There were only three of these Dictabel players in the world at the time. Mm-hmm. So they had to work with the British Library in London, and they had to figure out how to, like, get this thing to play. And that was how this speech was salvaged, and we were able to find it and use it. But at that time, you know, there were all these recordings that people were sort of like, I mean, there was part of the trial recording that I was able to find in the library that I had to tape together with splicing tape to hear it. And that was just a moment where all these kind of like lost and potentially erased recordings were being preserved. And, you know, the fact that we have that speech today is really a fluke of history.
It makes me think of like the letter from a Birmingham jail, that coalescing moment, right?
Yeah.
That's Joe Richman. He's executive producer and founder of Radio Diaries. Among the things he does is find amazing pieces of tape like that for radio specials. Fenley Foxen is also with me. She's a producer here at On Second Thought, and she lived in South Africa for a long time, knows a lot about the life and legacy of Mandela. And Fenley, I want to put that question to you. These strong ideals, you know, I'm prepared to die. Seven other defendants in the room, and he's the one who says that. Where did that come from him?
Well, you must understand the setting of that day. I mean, they've been so oppressed. I mean, Mandela, the black South Africans, totally oppressed, tortured, taken to prisons. The police would just knock on your doors, will barge into your house and arrest you and take you for torture. And I mean, they're living under terrible, terrible conditions. They have no access to water, sanitation, it's just a very cruel system that apartheid is. So you either want to die for that or do you want to live like that? I think that was his thinking. And he thought he can take this forward and say, well, I don't want to live like this, but at least if I die, I go under almost like in glory. You know, no one's going to forget Mandela. They will know him for someone who died for something he believed in. And that was very important to him.
Yeah, powerful stuff. Well, let's hear a little bit that later he remembered being flown to Robben Island where he was in prison. Let's hear a little clip of that.
As we're being flown to Robben Island, one tried to accept the reality that we may, in fact, spend years in prison. But we believed very strongly that we would not die in jail.
Joe, do you think that Mandela's power grew when he was in prison?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things, you know, that it's important to remember is that at this time, when he was sent to Robben Island, he was considered, called a terrorist, not just by the South African government, but by our government, the American government. I mean, he was considered, even up through the 80s, a terrorist. And so, you know, it's important to remember just how he was seen. But what happened in prison, you know, they thought that by putting him in prison, you know, no photographs of him, no recordings of his voice, they thought he would just lock away not just the man, but what he meant. And the opposite happened. You know, he became so mythical in prison, and one of the fortunate things about putting him in prison for the movement was that he was able to be there and his hands didn't get bloody. He didn't make mistakes. He was able to be kind of preserved in amber through what was very complicated and bloody battle for many years. So he really was able to become this myth in prison, and his reputation and his meaning only grew.
And in the meantime, international sentiment did eventually shift. A lot of external pressure, or international pressure against the apartheid system. In the end, why finally was he released on the 11th of December, February rather, in 1990?
Well, eventually, I think F.W. de Klerk got into conversations with Mandela and decided, you know, it's time to hand the power to basically phase out in the National Party. But you must remember, in 1985, South African president at the time, P.W. Botha, he had gone to Mandela and said, when Mandela was in prison, he had said to him, look, I can free you. Just tell your people to stop being so violent outside, because there was so much unrest in the country. The Umkhonto weSizwe, which is the ANC military wing, was already taking to the streets and fighting against the oppression. And Winnie Mandela would visit Mandela in Winnie Mandela is Mandela's ex-late wife, and she would visit him in prison and understand what it is that he's thinking and take it back to the streets for the people. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this was already happening, and Mandela said to P.W. Botha, he said, I will not come out of prison until my people or apartheid is completely ended. Once that ends, I will come out. So
standing firm on
principle. Standing firm. I mean, he was going to stay in prison and he was okay with that. Mm. And eventually, of course, they negotiated and Mandela was released by F.W. de Klerk.
Yes. Released, rewrote the constitution, became the first black president of South Africa on the 10th of May in 1994. You were there, Fenley. What did that mean to black and to white South Africa?
Oh, wow. When Mandela took power for black people, it was a moment of glorious emancipation. I mean, this, they've never seen a black leader in power. They have never seen someone take the center stage as he did at that moment in time. For white people, initially it was a time of a lot of fear. They weren't sure where this was headed. I remember people saying, well, I'm going to move to Australia. I don't know what's going to happen. But Mandela had this amazing, amazing ability to unify the nation by just saying the right things, and people believed in him in what he said.
Well, that's a question. Joe, you talked about him being sort of preserved in amber, but when you are actually governing inspirational figures, you can make mistakes. So he was a great, a venerated, gracious, elegant, and strong figure, but was he a good president?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's sort of two factors. You know, going back to his release, you know, part of it was, the thinking was, let's release him and he's just going to be seen as this old, frail, fallible man, and they'll demythologize him. That was a part of the thinking of releasing him, because he had become such a powerful symbol in prison. And they got that part wrong. You know, he became a more powerful figure once he was released. You know, the ability to kind of bring this transition, to make this happen in a peaceful way, which no one expected. But yes, as president, I think Mandela himself talked about, you know, I don't think anyone thought that that was his strength, to actually govern. He was, you know, I think one of the amazing things he did as president was to only stay for 4 years, one term. And that was something that he did intentionally and always said. And, you know, he talked about his own failings as president. AIDS was a real heartache for him in later years, that he did so little about AIDS in his country for his 4 years. But also, I have to say, when you look at the presidents who have followed him, you know, he sort of shines in relation to the presidents who have followed him in South Africa.
Yeah, hard act to follow, certainly. Fanny?
I just want to add to that. I mean, straight after his presidency, when he became a president, in 1995, we had the South African rugby. And rugby at that time was predominantly a white sport. So your stadiums are full of white people. Your players are mainly white people. I think there was just one black player. And when South Africa won that World Cup in 1995 against the All Blacks, which is your New Zealand team, Mandela came down and shook hands with Francois Pienaar, who was the captain at the time. He even wore the same jersey as the captain, Francois Pienaar, which was number 6. I remember that moment so clearly watching it. It was a moment that unified the whole nation. Black people were proud. White people were proud. Everyone was proud. And Mandela was actually at the helm of it.
You know, that was one of his amazing qualities, was this understanding symbolism that way. You know, there are a few examples. There was this famous example where he had tea with all of the widows of the ex-presidents of the National Party. And there's another example when he got out of prison, how he addressed the negotiations with his enemy. He talked to them in Afrikaans. And, you know, this sort of understanding how to kind of, deflate your opponent and kind of, in a way, it's such a lesson
Joe,
for our time now.
I'm sorry I have to wrap you up there, but a beautiful way to stop. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe Richman.
Thank you.
And Fenley Foxon.
Thank you.